the last paragraph of a letter that was making the rounds on social media this week. It says, "I recognize the political realities of my decision. Politically, it would be much easier and better for me to simply sign the bill. I've always tried to do what I feel is the right thing, regardless of the consequences. Sometimes I don't get it right, and I do not fault those who disagree with me. But even if you disagree with me, I hope this letter helps you understand the reasons for my decision." It's a letter from Spencer Cox, the governor of the state of Utah, and he's explaining why he's vetoing a bill creating a transgender sports ban. He points out that of the 75,000 high school students in the state, 4 identify as transgender. Only 1 is participating in girls' sports. But over 85% of transgender youth report suicidality. He says in his letter, "I don't understand what they're going through or why they feel the way I do, but I want them to live." So I'm not going to preach on gender identity issues, except to say that in the 27 days that I've been here, this issue has come up in the faith community. And I was able to point to the inclusive language in your constitution around gender identity and expression, and to say that there's at least 1 openly transgender bishop in our denomination, and to lift up our presiding bishop, Elizabeth Eaton, the head of our denomination, who has said no human institution decides who is human, who is visible, who is valued. Human sexuality and gender identity are a beautiful mystery. Trans people, like all people, are beloved by God. So this letter caught my eye because this issue had come up here, but what I want to talk about and how this is related to this week's gospel text is the contrast between 2 governors who made very different decisions in leadership over a difficult, hard issue. Last week, Jesus had a conversation with Annas, one of the priests. Peter denies he's a disciple of Jesus for the 2nd and 3rd time, and then the cock crows, just like Jesus predicted. Here we start out in this week's gospel text with Jesus being taken from Caiaphas to Pilate, the Roman governor of the area that includes Jerusalem. We don't have any report of what happened between Caiaphas and Jesus. And that's maybe because we don't need a report. Way back in chapter 11, which we read at the beginning of this month, we get Caiaphas' opinion on the matter. We already know what he thinks. Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. And remember, I told you the first Sunday I was with you, at that point in the Gospel of John, everything shifts. Everything from that point forward goes towards Jerusalem, Jesus' trial and crucifixion. After Lazarus is raised, the chief priests and the Pharisees call a meeting of the council. Their question is, what do we do? This man is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation. But Caiaphas says to them, "You do not understand. It's better for you to have one man die for the people than to have the whole nation destroyed." So from that day forward, they looked for a way to have Jesus put to death. Now Jesus has been brought to Pilate. In the first scene, Pilate is talking outside with the leaders. These are people he would have known and dealt with on a regular basis. Rome governs through local elites like the priests and the Pharisees. Pilate's role as governor is to protect and advance Rome's political and economic interests in alliance with the local elite. The leaders are allies, dependents, subordinates to Rome. Conversation between Pilate and the local leaders focuses on the charge against Jesus and who should really be handling his trial. Jews have power and authority over religious violations, but the punishment options are limited. They want Jesus dead. Only the Roman system has the power to do that. Jesus must be charged with a legal or political crime rather than a religious violation. When Pilate asks for the charge, the leaders act almost offended. We wouldn't have brought him to you if he hadn't committed a crime. There's almost a sense of, you figure it out. In the second scene, Pilate goes inside to talk with Jesus. Given the close working relationship between Pilate and the local leaders, Pilate's question, "Are you the king of the Jews?" makes sense. He may have heard at least a little about Jesus, and claiming you're a king not appointed by Rome would be a crime. But just like with Annas, Jesus was having none of it. He begins to talk about his kingdom, but it's not like anything Pilate has any experience of. And it is certainly not something that would threaten the political stability of the empire. "My kingdom is not from this world," Jesus says. Pilate tries again. "So you are a king?" Jesus evades the question. Pilate has gotten nothing from Jesus. There is no evidence. Pilate goes back outside. Pilate had all the power. He's not weak, disinterested, or apolitical. He begins the third scene by saying, "I find no case against him." Pilate tries to offer to let him go, but they would rather he free the bandit Barabbas. Pilate is not hapless or outmaneuvered. Pilate makes a political decision. He does what is best for Rome and the local elites. And Jesus' fate is sealed. Pilate knew Jesus was innocent, but he had committed no crime. Pilate would not have written the letter that Governor Cox wrote. Pilate chose appeasement over justice, death over life. Two very different leadership paths. "My kingdom is not of this world," Jesus says. What kind of kingdom is Jesus' kingdom? One where a governor risks a political career in the hopes that kids do not hurt themselves? Or one where a governor agrees to the community's demand that one be sacrificed for the rest, and who maybe feared losing some of their own power to Jesus? Hanging over this all is the fact that Passover will start at sundown. Passover, the story about the Israelites escaping an oppressive ruler and power, a story about freedom. And in a little while, with Jesus' resurrection, there will be a new kind of freedom, a new way of escaping oppression, a way that is not of this world.